From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of February 2017. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I was out this morning with Farm Credit again, this time in Mattoon at Lakeland Community College, along with Matt Bennett at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. We'll talk with him about market plans. And then as we close out our time together, Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Look us up online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can pick up your tickets to the All Day Ag Outlook. That's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, on the 7th day of March. At willag.org, the cost is just $30. That includes a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning, your lunch at the noon hour, and a dozen of our on-air analysts, plus one more and three policy specialists, too. Should be a fantastic day. Again, that's willag.org to buy your tickets online, or 800-898-1065 if you'd like to call in to pick those tickets up. Do that right now, 800-898-1065 or willag.org. One of the people that will be there, and the only one, I believe, that has made each and every one of the all-day Ag Outlooks since the very first one back in 1991 is Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and he's on track for another one this year. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing all of our wonderful listeners and a lot of people there and talking to everybody. Going to be a lot of fun as usual.
Yeah, indeed it will. So, speaking of a lot of fun, or maybe not so much fun, I'm wondering why it is that soybeans moved lower, and does it have to do anything with Janet Yellen's discussion with Congress today?
Yes, on both those things. We saw some profit taking after multi-month highs. We're seeing abundant supplies around to load out and improving South American weather and harvest, and the dollar being a little stronger. But boy, we saw the outside markets fluctuate a lot when Janet was talking. We had gold as much as a $14 range, silver 35-cent range today, an 80-cent range in crude oil today. So when she was talking, she'd say different things. Why, we'd shoot up and then we'd shoot down, and the S&Ps were all over, and the markets, we were in a little bit of profit-taking mode here today. Been, new highs for 4 days in a row, and it was a time for a little bit of a sell-off here.
It sounds as if the volatility was algorithm sort of, or black box trading. Is that right?
That would be my estimation, what we're looking at, because there sure wasn't a lot of other new news out there. I mean, we know that South America is getting along. They're loading out very rapidly. We know that their farmers aren't aggressively selling their beans, but they're hauling enough in that they can keep the rapid pace at the elevators loading out. We'd heard some stories about that the moisture levels were very high on the beans they were harvesting in northern Brazil, but no more stories followed through today on that. So we don't know. But they are loading out boats at basically about a record pace down there.
And they have quite a number of boats lined up to load out. I suppose many of them are headed to China.
China is doing very aggressively at that. We did see on the news wire today that the Mexican government was maybe trying to pass a bill that they would originate their corn from South America rather than the U.S. to try to strike back a little bit at some of the NAFTA talk along the way of renegotiating that. We hope that that doesn't go through, because Mexico is a very big grain partner of ours as far as buying our corn and beans.
It is the number one corn producer or purchaser from the United States in the world, surpassing Japan in recent years. So those are the top two that take corn exports out of the United States. And losing Mexico, any part of Mexico, would be pretty problematic, I think, for U.S. farmers. That brings us to the acreage battle, however, because we're looking forward to the coming growing season. What are your thoughts on corn and soybean acreage at the end of the month of March?
Well, I think that basically we're looking for, quite a few more bean acres to be added. That's what all of the polls have told us, what we're looking at, what the corn-bean ratio is telling us. But as we see this corn at 399.5 closing in today unchanged right near this $4 above mark, I think we're going to be losing a few of those extra acres. Now, that doesn't mean that we aren't going to plant more beans. That means we might not plant 5 million acres more of beans than we did last year. It might get cut down in that 2 to 3 range instead. But, you know, right now it's still very much more profitable to plant an acre of beans than is an acre
of
corn.
And do we have an idea of where most of those acres of extra acres of soybeans might be put in the ground?
Well, you know, if you read the Wall Street Journal, you're going to say that everybody up in the Dakotas and Kansas and around that area are a little more hurting, and they might put out a crop that's a little cheaper to put out as far as the bank financing and that goes, because going along. But I think we're going to see a mild switch over here in the middle of the Midwest, too, because I think there's a lot of farmers that and we know, as they've ordered their seed this year, the seed dealers that we survey are telling us that they're probably up 5 to 10% of their bean sales this year.
I suspect that producers have been asking you just a little bit about crop insurance. We are in the midst of the price-setting month for crop insurance for corn and soybeans. What kinds of questions do they have this year?
It hasn't been an awful lot of questions. The fact is, it's been more a little bit of sigh of relief saying, hey, we're getting close to that $4 mark in the corn, you know, above last year's levels where we're at. And, of course, the beans about a dollar above last year's levels. So a little bit of a sigh of relief that they're going to have a little better safety net for the year. I think that most of the farmers are going to stick with their pretty good coverage, because at these low prices, in case things would take off and they didn't have a good harvest, they're going to want to have some insurance backup for sure, and so is their bankers.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This morning, I spent some time in Mattoon at Lakeland Community College, along with Farm Credit, on one of their crop insurance presentations. And Matt Bennett was with us. Matt, of course, you hear here on Thursdays normally. He made a presentation this morning. Thanks, Matt, for taking some time here to talk about marketing plans and what you've been telling producers, not only here, but across the nation as it relates to kind of their break-evens and how they can really think about putting a marketing plan together. What's your take-home message for them?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd like everyone to think about is, you know, first of all, we're starting out this year in a way better situation than last year, whether we want to believe it or not. You know, we're $1.40 higher on soybean prices. You know, your November average currently, I believe, is $10.21 in February for your spring crop insurance, whereas last year we were $8.85. You know, you look at the corn situation, and yeah, we're only a dime higher than what we were last year. But, you know, whenever you look at input costs in a profitability spreadsheet, combined with the fact that we're a dime higher, we're significantly more profitable if we're assuming similar type of yields. And so bottom line is we're in a really good situation at this point. But, you know, as we've talked about before, rally's not a rally unless you at least do something with a portion of it.
How far along do you think producers ought to be on both corn and soybeans for new crop sales?
That's a great question. First of all, on soybeans, I'm probably going to be 30 to 40% of physical bushels for soybeans, but I'm going to have, and I do personally on my farm, have the rest of my crop protected. I've got a floor under all of it. You know, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm wondering why I didn't lock in $10.25, $10.30 soybeans. And so, you know, that's where we're at as far as corn goes. You know, we've got hedges in place, just straight December hedges, at least to get us through crop insurance time period, because we want to lock in the ratio between $3.95 to $4 corn and the input prices where they're at this year, because that ratio is significantly better than what it was a year ago.
So they have half a month to finish this out then.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the market has continued to give us a look at it. As you know, this can all go away very quickly. But if I was going to do anything on corn, a straight-up hedge, at some point I might cover that hedge with a short-dated call just to insulate that position. But I'm not going to get super carried away on corn, because I don't see near as much meat on the bone on corn as what I do with soybeans. I mean, there's a ton of profitability there at APH levels, so it's a lot easier discussion with beans than it is corn. But a straight hedge just to simply lock an insurance price, a pretty smart idea.
Right now, I know producers are thinking, hey, wait a second, Matt, I've got crop insurance coming that's going to put me in, at least for soybeans, at a nice level. And I might cover the rest of it 15 or 20%, but really, you're talking about going a lot further than I'm really willing to go. Why is it you think they ought to do this?
Well, you know, last year we had a lot of producers that didn't want to buy $11 puts whenever we were $11.50 to $12. They said, what if I waste 25 cents on a put option? And I said, well, buddy, you're going to be selling $12 beans, you know. I mean, it's simply insurance. And whenever you have a ton of profitability on the line in the soybean market, and I would say almost every grower in every meeting I'm in this winter is basically echoing the sentiments that they could see the soybean market just catapulting out of control lower at some point. Everyone's wondering why it's so high, but yet we're not hedging beans. And so is it going to hold together? Your guess is as good as mine. None of us know. But I certainly don't want to take for granted that it's going to hold together if I have profit margins on the table I can currently lock in.
You talk quite a little bit about the fertility and fertilizer cost, all of the production input cost in your presentation. What's the difference between this year and last year, in your opinion?
For 16, the average over about 100 folks that we work with was $45 an acre for N, P, and K for corn, you know. And so, you know, what we told producers to do this last fall is put your normal corn dry fertilizer on, and then also put 200 pounds of potash in front of the soybeans, because we're at multi-year lows for potash. And so I guess the way I look at it, we've got two major players in the fertilizer industry. If we do have 89 million acres of corn, we have a drought this summer or any type of drought, the corn market's going to rally. You and I both know that. I'm pretty sure that the two major players in the fertilizer industry are not going to be gracious and keep fertilizer prices at multi-year lows. And so I am definitely of the mindset that I want to go ahead and lock in cheap fertilizer prices. It's not going to go anywhere, you know. Fertilizer prices are still cheap, and I think that it's a good way to manage risk on the input side.
You've traveled quite a little bit across the country. Can you tell me about producers out west in particular? Are they really going to put more soybean acres in? And am I making the right assumption that Kansas, the Dakotas, maybe Missouri are really the places that will be pushing their soybean acres?
I think that's a pretty good assumption. I don't know if you saw yesterday, but cotton acres are going up big time in Kansas. And everywhere I've been in the South and in Kansas, the Panhandle, cotton acres are going up big time. Those guys made a mint. But that's a small portion of the acreage mix. You and I both know that. But in the Dakotas, I'd say I'd bet anybody a lot of money. If they don't have big prevent plant, they're going to go up significantly on soybean acres. I mean, you talk to guys in the Dakotas this past fall, they never had more than 50, 55 bushel beans on their farm. They were harvesting 70 and 75 bushel beans in places. I know a lot of folks right around Mitchell. There was really good weather between Mitchell and Sioux Falls. Man, they had some yields. And so, you know, those guys are in a situation out there. There's a credit crunch in the Dakotas as much as anywhere. I think there's a lot of folks talking about, you know, the fact that people are not getting the money. And that is being openly discussed up there, more so than anywhere I've been. And so, of course, there's going to probably be more soybeans because it's a whole lot cheaper to put in the ground. And guys are making more money planting beans than corn.
Thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. He comes to us from the Farm Credit Illinois meeting. We were both there this morning in Mattoon at Lakeland Community College.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Pick up those tickets right now, WILLAG.org, for the all-day Ag Outlook, the 7th day of March, or at 800-898-1065. We're now joined to take a look at the energy markets by Steve Platt. He's in Chicago at Archer Financial Services. Thanks, Steve, for being with us. Crude oil's been one of those movers in the market, hasn't it?
The crude oil, though, I guess, has really been talked about for not doing much. The volatility has been quite light, and the market has been torn by a variety of influences, which has kept both gasoline and heating oil in relatively tight ranges as well. The market was certainly on notice here, looking at the OPEC supply rates. Given the production agreement that we saw come into effect at the beginning of the year, it has shown some surprisingly good compliance, but that did not do much given that it had already been reflected in the market. Instead, you've seen a lot of people talk about the rising rig counts in the U.S. and also increased investment in reaction to the production curb agreement, which has also led to some selling interest overhead. So the crude market actually has held to a relatively tight $3 range between this 51.5 area on the downside and around 54.5 on the upside. For now, I think we'll probably continue to hold to those ranges until we maybe move into late February, early March. A lot of the talk will certainly center on the Libyan production levels, which have generally increased, and we'll still be watching once again the OPEC production levels and also production levels out of some of the non-OPEC producers who are also participating in the agreement. Russia, for one, has shown some declines in their production levels, which were relatively high at the beginning of the year. They're still looking overall for the demand side to come on stronger, and we have seen subsequent revisions in the demand side on a global basis. And with respect to some of these emerging markets, such as Brazil and even the Russian Confederation. So overall, this market is still relatively finely balanced. I think the expectations, though, as we move into the middle of next year, is that we will see some strengthening in values as the economy continues to recover globally. And that should help provide the basis for some strength to this market overall.
Thanks, Steve. That's Steve Platt. He's with Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Don, thanks for being with us. Can you start today in California? Tell me about rainfall there and conditions that they can expect in pretty dire situations in part of that state.
Yeah, the California situation is certainly something that's going to be making headlines for weeks, if not the next few months. Right now, they are enjoying a break in the weather with sunshine and drier conditions, but it's just a break. There is going to be an onslaught of Pacific storms that will cover the entire West Coast, but more importantly, Central and Northern California gets back into the rain late Thursday and Thursday night, and then basically from Friday through next Thursday, off and on chances of rain up and down the California coast, and heavy Sierra snows will continue. Right now, the central and northern Sierra snowpack is running at record levels, past their record of 83 and 84, and they should likely have a good chance of breaking that this year.
Right, and then move into the Midwest. Give me conditions across the plains and the Corn Belt.
Well, really, pretty pleasant considering it's February. We're still going to have a little bit of an up and down in our temperature pattern, but overall, we see most of the real cold air with this next cold front coming in over the next couple of days, heading to the Great Lakes in New England. It will be colder coming into the next couple of days, but that colder air slides off to the east. A nice warm-up is coming our way, along with, for the most part, dry conditions that will extend late this week, through the weekend, and into early next week. Really won't be until late Tuesday or Wednesday next week before the next front and precipitation moves in.
And finally, conditions in both Brazil and Argentina.
Well, kind of different depending on where you are. Now, in South America, Brazil is looking at a drier trend here over the next week to 10 days. So for any harvesting down there, it looks like drier weather will favor that. Shower chances are better in Argentina. Argentina looking to be getting more rain than Brazil. Nothing too heavy, but showers, especially across the central and the eastern areas, the most likely to get wet.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
Don Day is with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and helps us wrap up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.